I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. We've been publishing a framework called the Five Proofs of Outcome-Based Revenue. What must be true before you sell a guaranteed outcome? Proof of performance is the one for today. Telemetry as commercial evidence that what you promised you actually delivered for your customer. Now, Shaker Sorokai co-founded SkyHigh Networks and Securant. He teaches cybersecurity at Berkeley. And in June, he raised $6.5 million for ChatSea.ai, where he's the CEO. And this is a company that it's a failure intelligence layer for AI agents. They cataloged 10,000 enterprise agent failures into 157 categories, then built a shared memory so mistakes don't spread. This should be a really interesting conversation about making sure your AI agents are actually doing their job. So let's get the insight engine running here. Shaker, it's wonderful to meet you in person, and I think it's going to be a super interesting conversation. And I was looking at your background. You had Confluent Software, Securant, SkyHigh, three companies, three exits, and all three were about seeing something that the enterprise really had not yet seen. And now you're on the square of agent failure. Take me inside. What was the catalyst for you to start this company? When did you realize that, hey, this is going to be a thing for companies?
Yeah, first of all, thank you, Thomas, for having me on this podcast. Very timely. And the genesis of ChatSea itself was sort of rooted on our own experience in using AI in for personal use, right? You consistently saw brilliance from AI, and at the same time, you saw it do or say things which were completely off the rails. And that sort of pattern was evident for a lot of people. And everybody called it hallucinations, if you will. But it turned out that is more of a fundamental control gap. If you want enterprises to use these AI and agents, you needed them to know that it's not going to fail randomly in production, right? And so this is a control gap, which we saw emerging. And it's similar to the kind of control gaps I noticed when we started my other companies. And those are in different layers of the stack, if you will. And the most recent one at SkyHigh was really a control gap around moving to third-party cloud where the trust models change. So that's a similar kind of paradigm which we noticed here. And just like in the other cases, I believe that it needs to be a sort of independent layer capable of determining whether this AI sort of remains aligned with intended outcome. And the final point here I would say is this sort of best illustrated even by the recent issue with OpenAI and Hugging Face, right? OpenAI is obviously the pioneer leader in the space, and even they weren't able to make sure that their agent is not misaligned with their operator intent. So imagine the plight for any other enterprise, right?
Yeah, based on that recent example, I mean, it's a very timely conversation because I think, you know, it's something that people have been talking about for quite a while, that, you know, AI in a sense can have a mind of its own, and what are the guardrails around that? How do you understand what's going on there? And you've made the point publicly that whether companies like it or not, right, AI is already in their enterprises. It's coming through Copilot, through Salesforce's Agentforce, through Databricks, Workday. They're all building AI capabilities. So it's not like you can just stiff arm this as an enterprise, say, well, we don't know if we can trust you or whatever, we're going to keep it out. So from your experience, what's actually running today that nobody's governing?
Yeah, it's a great question. But I wouldn't say that, you know, nobody's governing it, but many enterprises, I feel like the governing, sort of governing which model they should use, what data the AI uses, or even have mechanisms to approve applications, things like that. But I think the fundamental gap is that the governance stops there. It stops pre-deployment in almost all the enterprises.
Yeah.
Right. And that really leads to a what I would think of as a runtime gap for governance. So it's not as much about governing entry into production, but how do you consistently govern what happens at runtime? And this happens across even third-party agents, which pretty much every SaaS now has an AI embedded in it, right? Just for their own survival, mm-hmm. but also because it's, you know, really useful. And governing of AI sort of extends beyond your enterprise deployment of custom agents to any software which they bring in. So the runtime aspects of these AI applications which are interacting with their business data, which are implementing workflows, business workflows and things like that, are the ones which I think enterprises are still trying to grapple with. How do I make sure that at runtime, this AI doesn't go sideways in essence?
So yeah, so playing it back, what you're saying is a lot of companies have probably pretty solid governance on the front end when they're deciding what tools to bring in to deploy, et cetera. So they've got eyes on that. But once they've made that decision and the tool's up and running, it is the runtime governance that you're most concerned about. And also, again, to put this in perspective, I mean, historically, you choose a SaaS tool, CRM system, whatever, you deploy it, all the front end decisions around that, governance, et cetera, security, you know, super important. But once it was up and running, it's not like you were super worried about that the way that with AI, right. Because AI is it's almost like a evolving living thing, right? It's not right, static. Right. And so this runtime governance becomes a lot more important. And I think what's interesting is that you've said that agent failure can look chaotic, but it actually falls into very repeatable patterns. And that's a real claim, right? That agent failure can be put into a taxonomy. So talk about that. Why is that so powerful for companies?
Yeah, no, let me sort of talk about that in the context of a completely different domain. So if you go back 100 years in the medical industry, I think in the 1940s, the International Statistical mm-hmm. Institute had a problem, which is doctors were sort of diagnosing various symptoms and converting symptoms to diseases, whatever, but there was no common lingo or taxonomy by which they were able to communicate what they're doing. So they came up with what's called the International Classification of Diseases. It's just a coding of, and the first version was really mm-hmm. all the codes which represented how a human died, right? And it had 161 categories. It could be pneumonia, it could be some liver disease, whatever, right? And that standardization actually unlocked a lot of interesting side effects, right? The first thing is doctors were now able to reason about diseases and sort of reuse approaches to remediate their patients. Research was unlocked because now they were able to look at data across different practitioners. AI is approaching that same ICD kind of moment, which is that the problem, which I said earlier, was everybody, when AI doesn't do something right, they say, oh, it hallucinates. And that's the problem. Once you sort of make it generic and say, it's like saying the cause of death is sickness. Right. It doesn't help anybody mm-hmm. to say, okay, now what does it mean? Right. Is there a systematic way in which I can approach it? And that's essentially what we tried to do with our classification. So first, when we even started, we weren't sure that there is that classification, right? You would assume without sort of data to support it that maybe these are all very mm-hmm. unique and you have to play whack-a-mole and that's the only approach. Then what we did is we took 10,000 odd grounded failures, which are observed in enterprises, and we started analyzing if there's a pattern, and we were able to identify 157 categories, unique types of mm-hmm. failures. And I don't want to draw parallel to the 161 categories of death in the first version in the ICD, mm-hmm. but it's fascinating that we sort of were able to categorize it into this. Now, once we've done that, it enables, just like in the medical world, right? Like I said, the ICD helped doctors to become more efficient and so on. It didn't cure a disease, but it created a diagnostic foundation for systematic medicine and public health. And that's essentially what we are hoping our taxonomy of these failures will do, right? So agent failure today, in the absence of something like this, will continue to be described through symptoms, right? People may say, oh, the AI answer was bad, or it hallucinated, or agent didn't work, customer is unhappy. None of that is going to help you sort of diagnose a problem and find a common root cause and fix it. And so once you have these names and codes, systematically sort of distinguish the symptom from the underlying cause, right? And once you do that, you can measure recurrence, identify clusters, compare agents across verticals, assign ownership. And then we also can determine which controls actually reduce those kind of failures and so on. And by the way, a lot of the initial analysis of this, we published just last week in the State of Enterprise AI Failures report, where we compare what kind of failures happen in different verticals, different business functions, and some learnings from that analysis as well. So, you know, the ICD codes didn't actually cure disease, right? It created diagnostic foundations for systematic medicine and public health. And I believe that there's a similar approach which can help in the agentic world.
That's fascinating to me. And just playing this back, first of all, I love this analogy of like categorizing disease and better understanding. And I think you're right. I mean, in the world of enterprise AI, people say, well, hey, the AI is not working. It's hallucinating. And what you're putting on the table is that's not very helpful. That's an incredibly blunt instrument to say it's hallucinating. And I think intuitively, we get hallucinating, right? Everyone who's ever interacted with AI is asking a question and it comes back with a wrong answer that's, you know, fictitious or whatever. And you go, okay, it hallucinated. But what you're saying is in terms of agent failures out there, it is a lot more nuanced than that, a lot more sophisticated. So that's, I think, number one, the fact that you have to get beyond the blunt instrument of saying it's broke, it's hallucinating. But then what you'd also put on the table of being able to categorize these patterns of failure across vertical industries, I assume across different use cases, is also super powerful. And I have to tell you, I'm not seeing a lot of business press, if you will, on this topic. But the sooner as an industry that we can build a taxonomy there, understand it, and be able to then go after, again, if I'm a financial services and now I understand the 10 most common ways that agents can fail in my particular, you know, vertical and use cases, that's super helpful, right? For me to make sure that I am putting governance around that, which leads me to this next question, because you've said that, again, AI is kind of living, breathing, it behaves differently. And the companies can't simply test their way out of failure. It's not like the old model. You pilot something, you say, oh, okay, it's working. Now let me put it into production. And now it's in production and it's going to be good for the next X amount of years. That there's not like you just, again, pilot, test it, green light it, and walk away. And so it is back to this concept that you've iterated around runtime assurance. And so talk a little bit more about how that's different than traditional piloting and testing.
Yeah, you had a couple of different points there. So let me maybe quickly touch upon hallucinations and so on, right? And then I'll talk about the pilots as well. What our report, which I alluded to earlier, found that hallucinations accounted for less than 10% of failures. And failure categories increasingly are around resolution or escalation failures, things like customer repeatedly asks for something and it goes through a loop where a human should have been escalated to, or an execution failure where the agent understands the request but selects the wrong tool or supplies incorrect parameters or silently fails. And the silent failure is something mm-hmm. which is very insidious. And I don't know if you're familiar with what people call the Cobra effect. It's a very quick anecdote. This was pre-independence India, when the British were in Delhi. There was a lot of snakes, and they wanted to incentivize the snake charmers to get snakes out from the city, I guess. This is 100 years or more ago. And so they incentivized the snake charmers to get the cobras and give it to them, right? So that they can get rid of it. And what happened was the metric they were using was to sort of count the number of snakes which they were collecting, in essence, right? What the folks did was they actually said, oh, wow, that's interesting. That's the way I'm going to be measured. So they started breeding cobras and giving it to the authorities. Yeah. And the authorities said, oops, this is not the intended consequence for us. And that is essentially what's happening with all these AI failures. You have a metric, which is some goal. The agent says, wait, I know a better way to get there. And I think that's what explains even the OpenAI kind of problem we talked about earlier, right? So those are the kinds of failures which we wanted to be able to detect. And those failures are not necessarily going to show up in a pilot. because of the emergent behavior of agents and the probabilistic nature of how AI works. And so the agent is doing exactly what the local metric rewards while defeating the organization's actual objective. So if that's the case, you need to be able to do your pilots, reason about what the traditional ways of doing your pilots and, you know, procuring products and evolving it into production. And so I actually view, going back to the medical analogy, I actually view pilots as almost like clinical trials. So clinical trials are necessary. Medicine will not eliminate clinical trials, but it changes what passing a pilot means, right? So a clinical trial will establish if a treatment is sufficiently safe, effective to a certain degree. But then, you know, medicine has a practice where they say they'll continue to perfect it by getting telemetry back on patient comorbidity, any interactions, things like that, which they see in the field. And basically, medicine doesn't stop it at approval. That's the equivalent of the clinical trial, pilot stopping and handing it over to production. There's a continuous loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the surveillance post-market, which medicine does, is what you need at runtime. So pilot, I think, will continue to be important, which is it'll establish a behavioral baseline, for example. But I also think the pilot should incorporate test resilience, use something like your chaos monkey for agent behavior or adversarial testing, like with GOAT or some of these tools or framework, which will establish the baseline and then use production feedback to ensure that you're not finding these corner cases or failures. And if you look at other products which may be out there and how they fit into this whole ecosystem, I think of it as evaluation is like clinical trials, like your pilots, you're evaluating it. It's a very controlled diagnostic and assessment. And then you have observability, which I think of as more like your bedside monitors, laboratory equipment, maybe even things like any kind of monitoring of your application in the equivalent of the humans, right? And runtime assurance is that continuous clinical supervision. So it brings together all these vital signs, test results, history, and so on and so forth. And so the pilot and clinical trial and the resilience test versus runtime assurance is what I think enterprises are grappling with. And so ensuring that you have this continuous view of what it means to have AI, you know, provide business value, where the runtime assurance becomes ongoing supervision, intervention, learning, so that issues don't recur in the real world, I think is where I see this go.
So, you know, as I listen to this, and again, I really do like the medical analogy here, because I think AI is something that is living and evolving.
Right.
So you have to think differently about it as if, you know, as a technology in terms of employing it. But let me ask, I'm just super curious about this in terms of runtime assurance and again, using the medical analogy. So let's think about the example of a new wonder drug that the company has to cure something. And like you said, there'd be clinical trials, smaller population. You're going to test to make sure that it's safe. It passes that. Then you put it out into the broader population and you keep monitoring because, you know, not all profiles were tested in clinicals, whatever. And that's when you really find out, you know, is this drug safe or not? You make sure you really understand any adverse effects, et cetera, right? Here's my question. So using our medical analogy here, once a drug is in the population for years and years and years and years and years, you've have enough population data, you're pretty confident, you understand how safe that drug is, when to use it, when not to use it, et cetera. For AI, it's not going to be that stable. Right? Because I have to imagine, even right now, you have runtime assurance, you start to identify problem cases, whatever, and then the technology is changing. It's like releasing, it's like they modify the drug, right? So it's like this constant updating of, you know, so I guess what I'm chipping at is it's not a static world. It's actually more dynamic than our clinical example here, because the underlying drug, if you will, or cure is constantly evolving. So are you seeing that already, or what's your experience with that?
No, absolutely. I think the fact that technology is moving at this rapid pace while enterprises have to adopt and show value of AI to solve their business problems. It's almost like changing the wheel of an airplane while it's in flight. And you don't know what consequences may arise. So it actually then reinforces the need for enterprises to know what they're trying to achieve, ensure that whatever controls, whatever expectations of their outcomes of AI are actually aligned with what the thesis was when they first adopted AI for a business function. And and the way they do it is by not only observing outcomes, but also how the system was behaving when the outcomes came about. And that's the only way you can find these kinds of issues where the intent of the operator don't get misaligned with what the AI does, for example. And certainly that's one of the key problems which I think enterprises will have to face over the next few quarters, because enterprises are spending a lot of money on AI and they need to show that outcome and value. And also a lot of these enterprises are at a stage where they've done pilots and they're want to move a lot of these applications into production, but they have this confidence gap, right? To say, hey, I'm not 100% sure that there's going to be no issue in production. So this sort of helps systematize that thinking rather than having a loosey-goosey, trust me kind of effect. You say, okay, this is a systematic way in which we're going to roll it out. And in fact, I actually think there is a new kind of practice around AI reliability, like almost like a SOC, but like a AI reliability operation center or something, which will emerge, where just like when cloud came out, you had,
As I listen to you, it is so interesting because what we see in the industry, we deal with a lot of these, you know, our members are these technology companies that are rapidly building AI capabilities and deploying. And there's what we call this last mile problem in enterprise AI, which is the fact that companies know that there's benefits to AI. They want to use it, but their, you know, their data is not ready. They're, you know, again, governance issues, whatever. So they need a lot of help initially, right? Just to do those initial pilots, just to understand those initial use cases, and just to do the initial deployment. And so there's obviously a lot of, you know, effort on closing that gap down. That's number one. Number two, I think you and I would both agree, the powerful use cases for AI, you know, for enterprises, there's no doubt that they're there. I mean, it's not a question of, you know, when people say, well, I don't know, I'm spending all this money on AI, I'm not sure if there's an ROI. Trust me, we documented enough use cases within TSI members. The ROI is there. It's massive. Right. So for sure. So companies are motivated to close this last mile gap down and deploy it. But what you're saying, and again, I think that I do not see a lot of attention on this with enough, is that AI, again, is different. And this concept of runtime governance is going to be super critical once these companies close this last mile gap, right? Once they start really deploying their use cases at scale, there's going to have to be a whole wrapper around that, like an ongoing managed services, ongoing, you know, centers of excellence that are on this. And that's going to be table stakes to make sure that basically AI stays on the rails. But you've talked about the fact that these mistakes when AI can go off the rails and nobody knows can be incredibly expensive. And you have this example of this, you know, merchant code, right? And so the agent gets a code wrong, and that code propagates through systems and nobody realizes it until, you know, that little code mistake is suddenly costing the money company. Let's say it's a pricing issue, right? That something's priced incorrectly is costing them millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's like, oh, now we realize we have a problem, right? So the cost of this, right? Companies are going to quickly realize there's a massive exposure here on cost. And I'm just curious, are you starting to see your customers start to wake up to that reality?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if I may indulge you again with a medical analogy.
Yeah, go for it.
I think, So I think there's four layers of cost, I should say, which the medical practice is actually sort of honed over the last few decades. And it's actually probably best illustrated in John Snow's investigation of the London cholera, I think in the 1850s sometime. There's four ways in which the cost was measured. One is direct loss. Like in their case, how many people died, right? How many illnesses were reported, all of that. And this was in that Broad Street, right next to the Broad Street pump, right? That's how he detected that cholera was waterborne rather than airborne. So that failure categorization helped, you know, understanding where it happened. So the first thing they measured was how many people died and things like that. The second was the propagation multiplier, right? So the shared water source, one contaminated pump could sort of basically affect an entire population. So they needed to have a multiplier for how much propagation happens. The third one is a detection delay. Now, how long does it take to detect it, that there is a failure? In this case, the cholera was because of this. Because until they were able to do that, they were thinking it was an airborne disease. And they were spending boatloads of money and trying to figure out how to solve that problem. And the real problem was sort of increasing the surface area of the blast area. And finally, it's the reversibility, which is very asymmetric, right? Disabling the pump was relatively simple, I would suppose, but it could not reverse the harm. And so when you talk of enterprise cost for AI, it's sort of in the same kind of buckets, I would say, right? The direct loss, like you said, with that merchant example, could be incorrect fees or, you know, rewards, things like that. The propagation multiplier equivalent is, okay, you've tagged it wrong, the AI tagged certain merchant wrongly. That may have downstream effects of from a fraud model, for example, where it may actually be that the merchant is a fraudulent merchant, which wasn't caught, therefore there was business impact of that, or maybe compliance impacts and so on. And then if there is a delay in detection, you see these kind of situations where the same mistake has been done over and over by these agents, which the cost accumulates, right? The cost of being wrong. And that's a big problem too. And finally, I think reversibility is also a very challenging problem with AI. And because today when people talk of cost, like token cost or failures, it's again like a blunt instrument. Am I spending $1 billion? But it's question should be about what business intent is that particular AI trajectory trying to address. And so basically, if you are able to tag, this is what the user was trying to achieve, and when it was trying to achieve this particular, you know, function is when the failure happened, then you can say, okay, certain actions which the agent is taking are more important or more critical. Maybe this agent is triggering a workflow to transfer, you know, $1 million in a B2B transaction. That failure there is a significantly worse and irreversible action compared to maybe the agent referencing a wrong document for a customer in a customer support interaction, right? So being able to think about those four costs, just really emphasize that is the direct costs, how many downstream decisions inherit this, consequences of the most sensitive context, you know, are just averages. And then finally, how long can it persist? I think all of those are the ones which will be the ultimate metric, which is cost per successful business outcome, I think, not cost per token or conversation or technically completed workflow. I think that's probably where the industry will go. And that's something which we are trying to do at ChatC as well. Because we are able to detect failures, every time we detect failure, we classify what is the intent, what was the context in which this failure happened, how important is it, what are the risks associated with it. And then we can actually quantify, okay, there was not only wasted tokens because the response, the agent did something wrong, but these are the downstream effects which could have these indirect costs associated with failure.
As I listen to you, again, I think people are going to have to become incredibly sophisticated around how they are both monitoring, classifying, and responding, right, to these risks and challenges in a way that I would argue that most enterprises are just not equipped to do that yet, right? They just don't have their heads around it. They're probably not making enough investment there yet. And so I'm super curious. So this is the last question I ask you on this today, and that is, when there are problems with agents, right? When an agent goes sideways and there's financial impact from that, who's responsible? I mean, what are you seeing out there? Is it the platform vendor? Is it the, you know, system integrator that installed or maybe deployed the agent for the customer? Is it the customer themselves? Because, hey, it was your agent, you're responsible now. When these things go sideways, where's the liability for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the industry is grappling with that. In fact, I think it starts even before the enterprise or the model providers. It's even cyber insurance and risks folks, right? So people are struggling with trying to figure out, how do I quantify AI risk? Once you quantify it, then you can put a price tag around it. And so, you know, having this rigorous approach is an important part. But I think fundamentally, responsibility for what happens with AI is a shared responsibility, just like in the cloud world, right? You moved to a third party, something which third party had to handle, something you had to handle. But in all cases, accountability ultimately will rest with the enterprise, which is sort of trying to deliver some outcome to its customers, right? So if you look at accountability, that's where I think structured failure analysis reports and things like, you want to know for your business what's the various ways in which things are going wrong and how do you improve the outcome will become very critical. And in order for you to reconstruct that evidence chain, you'll need to have things like, you know, what was the user trying to accomplish? What policies were applied? You know, what's the life cycle stage? You know, which party controlled what part of the system? So you can then assign some sort of responsibility to each party involved, because it is a shared responsibility model, right? So having that kind of approach is something which we are enabling some of our early customer engagements, where we want to get a sort of general handle, just like with Sky High, when we started the cloud security world, we had the shadow IT report. We sort of create a failure analysis report. So it is all the shadow behavior which is happening in an enterprise with all the agents which are, you know, embedded within SaaS or your own, so that you can quantify where these failures are, all the ways in which we quantify, we talked about earlier, and then being able to identify who's responsible for it while still making sure that the customers are accountable, but this makes them be accountable for it, right? So that finally, I think at some point, this whole AI reliability operation center kind of thing is the one that operationalized that behavioral reliability in production, I think.
This is a super interesting topic. And the one thing I'll say, which is encouraging, you know, there's so much dialogue around how AI is going to destroy professions and, you know, disintermediate different folks in different roles. But as I listen to you, it's the other side of that coin, which is there are entirely new industries that are going to get created here, like the square that you're sitting on. I mean, this concept of runtime assurance is a completely new thought, and it's going to require new technologies like you're working on, new taxonomies, new roles, new skills, new professionals that really master this. So from that side, it's exciting, but it's definitely early days. I mean, would you agree with that in terms of companies really starting to get their heads around this?
No, I agree with you. I think there's going to be new opportunities. But what I do see is that enterprises are already in this journey. So it's a question of when, not if. And so being prepared for it, being ahead of the curve actually helps enterprises actually get the differentiations they need for their businesses, I think, as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you sharing your insights on this topic. And I always end these episodes with a question of the day for our audience. And so my question is very simple, folks. What is your runtime assurance strategy? Cheers, everybody.